This is Paige Hattie, the director of Mobius Connect, and I am here today with Bill Bartow. Welcome, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm fine. I'm very good. Thank you for asking. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you. So let's get started, Bill. First of all, I'd love if you could share a little bit of your background with the audience and maybe a bit more about how you got started in reliability engineering.
Sure. Yeah. Like I imagine a lot of people out there, I kind of came into it in an interesting way. I wouldn't say I stumbled into it, but it may not have been the typical way. My background is in mechanical engineering. I have a degree in mechanical engineering from the University of Central Florida, and I worked for years as a mechanical engineer in the design space. I got to play around with maintenance a little bit in some of the projects I worked on, but for the most part, started off really on the design side of things. It wasn't until I'd spent some time with Walt Disney World in their safety, quality, design, and then into the maintenance engineering group that I was asked in 2007 to take on a reliability engineering role in one of the parks, and didn't have any idea what that meant. We actually hadn't defined it necessarily as a company at that point. It was a thought that one of the directors of maintenance had of, hey, why don't we get a reliability engineer involved? So I said yes, and I took on the position to look at things a little differently, right? So as a maintenance engineer, I had a different outlook and moved over the reliability engineering world. And to get up to speed, I went to just about every conference I could. I bugged everybody online. Sent emails to anybody who would answer an email and had information on their website, but I took it all in and had a very good time working in the field. I realized that it was something that I had always had a passion around, but really couldn't put a finger on it. As a design engineer, I took pride in the fact that my designs took into account that they'd have to be maintained and last for a long time. But I really didn't know there was a term or a way to put that into practice on a permanent basis. So it was amazing to me that I was able to get into that role, realize that there was a discipline devoted directly to that reliability side of things that I'd always taking pride in, and it really just took off from there.
That's a fantastic experience, Bill. So then what do you feel like are some differences between maintenance engineering and reliability engineering that you've kind of learned and noticed along the way?
Yeah, so as like I said, I started off as a maintenance engineer, right? So I was the stereotypical answer the phone at 3 a.m. anytime maintenance had an issue, and drive over and help them out of when they needed engineering help from inspections they were doing or PMs they were completing. And I used to always joke that what are you going to work on Monday? Well, I'm going to work on Monday whatever happened on Sunday. What are you going to work on Thursday? Well, I'm going to work on Thursday, whatever happened on Wednesday, right? It was very reactive, and there's a place for that, right? Like there needs to be that type of support and response that when things go wrong, you need to put together a concerted effort. We applied engineering and maintenance to make sure we were doing the right thing safely. That would get the rides back up and running in that case, right? But when I took on the reliability engineering role, I tell the story that, we kind of goofed into it, but they took away my radio and moved my desk, which really brought me out of that reactive world and put me, because I really had no other outlet for it, in a proactive world, which is, I think, the most important part of making that differentiation between maintenance and reliability engineering. Is one's, really on the day-to-day reliability engineering can't be there, right? It's got to be thinking about the future. Now you're using the past to try to predict and influence the future, but it's really a bit of a mindset. I also think of reliability engineering as, so maintenance engineering tends to focus on the typical disciplines. So you've got electrical and mechanical and maybe, you know, some other type of computer down in the maintenance, right? So when you're responding to something, you've got to know a lot about it. I always felt that reliability engineering sort of transcended the typical engineering disciplines and went into another area where you're looking at processes, which I could do a failure modes and effects analysis or facilitate a root cause on an electrical issue as well as I could a mechanical issue, even though my background is mechanical. So you also bring the other disciplines together in that sense when you're focusing on reliability engineering. That's why, I don't know if many people know this, but if you sat for the industrial engineering PE exam, the professional engineering exam, there's a section on reliability engineering in there that's not in either the electrical or the mechanical PE test. It's because industrial engineering is focused on processes and looking at, you know, queuing theories and things like that, that it makes more sense that it belongs in industrial engineering discipline than it does in any of the others.
That makes a lot of sense, Bill. So then what would you say is one of the most important things that you've learned when it comes to making reliability improvements?
It's got to be organizational change management and the people side of change. I relate my experience of leaving Disney, right? So you could probably imagine I'd worked for Disney for a number of years. When I left and told people that I used to work for Disney, the first reaction was, how in the world could you have left Disney, right? It's got to be the greatest job in the world. And here's how I put that into context with organizational change management is I didn't understand change management when I was at Walt Disney World. I would go to my maintenance counterparts or other folks in engineering, and I would say, you know, that impeller is wrong for that application, or it's, you know, it's worn out and it wears out too quickly, and we need to put a different one in. Here it is. Here's the different impeller you should use. Go do it. And I got very little traction when I approached changes that way, with just a technical, we're just considering the technical side of it. People didn't respond very well to it. Hey, mechanic, here's your new PM. Why don't you go ahead and start doing it? And well, why would I, you know, they would just look at you like, well, what's wrong with the PM I have today? I'm not going to do your PM, you know, leave me alone. And what I did in 2012 when I left Disney was I just chalked that up to that place doesn't appreciate me. I'm going to go look somewhere else. And it wasn't until I started consulting and got into the consulting world at Lifecycle Engineering that we were taught about organizational change management. And we were all certified in the PROCI methodology of change management, where before you even start talking about the technical part of the change is you have to create what they call awareness and desire in the change. So in the PM example, instead of walking in there at the new PM and saying, here's your new PM and I'm here to train you on it, or, you know, here's all the tools you need for it, it's, you've got to create some awareness of, hey, did you know that there's actually a better way to align this coupling other than what you may know now of just using a straight edge, right? Are you aware that there are technologies? Are you aware that there are you know, different tools that we could use that would make this that just a different way of doing it? And if you can get them to agree to the, now I understand there's a different way to do it, then you create the desire, right? So yeah, now it's the what's in it for me. But you know, you could take this job that's normally a little, maybe it takes a long time, and maybe it's you're not really comfortable with the way it is, or maybe in the worst case, right, it's not maybe the safest way of doing it. Are you aware there's, can I create the, it's easier, it's quicker, it gets you back to your you know, your planned work better, or whatever it happens to be. Once you can create that desire and get past that step, then you can, then you're almost, instead of pushing the rope, right, you're going to get pulled into the situation. All right, now, yeah, that's great. You know what? I didn't know there was a tool. It does sound like a great thing. What is it? All right, well, here's the new PM on how to align, or here's the new tool for this. So once I realized that, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, that how could I have ever expected anybody to do anything differently, or to, you know, do the things that I wanted them to do if I wasn't even really approaching the way people change. So in doing everything, and it's crazy, once you start getting into change management and come up with either the ProSci methodology or something, you find yourself using it in daily life, right? When you're talking to your kids or your spouse or whomever, right? You're like, I'd like to convince this person or introduce this different kind of change. Well, you know, are they even aware that there's a different way of doing it? Or, you know, hey, can I create in them the desire? So it's funny how it applies to all aspects of life, but certainly when trying to make improvements out in the field or in your plant, understanding the way that people change, and making sure that they're ready for that change is, I think, the most important thing that I've learned.
Very, very true. And actually, Bill, I think that's quite ironic. I think we had some crossover in maybe our time that we spent at Disney. I think I worked there towards the tail end of your time there as well.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Do you have everybody ask you, like, hey, did you know
Bill? Did you work
Bill?
In a park, or were you in Celebration?
So I worked in the parks. I started, in my early career, I was in the Central Shops area, which is in back of the Magic Kingdom. Mm-hmm. I eventually worked in the tunnels in the Magic Kingdom underground.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
I had an office there for quite a long time. I worked in Epcot, behind Epcot. Actually, our office was in the old Energy Pavilion, which is now being changed into something else. And then, I was able to grow it from one park to all five parks. So to the end of my career, I moved back to the Ride and Show building, back at Central Shops, and was able to support all four parks plus the transportation group as well. So yeah, I got to spend a lot of time in all the different parks.
Yeah, were you familiar at all with, at Epcot, the performing arts trailer in the back of the house there?
Like Pico?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so the maintenance teams were in Pico. I actually worked, believe it or not, I worked in entertainment when I was in high school and college at the studios. That was my high school and college job, was being friends with the Beast, if you know what I mean.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. That is quite a friend to have.
Yeah. It was very conducive to studying, believe it or not, because if you were in a good enough show, I did like maybe in an 8-hour shift, I might do 4 10-minute shows, and the rest of the time I was like backstage and could study and do all kinds of things. So it's kind of funny how all that happens to work, but yeah, when I look back, ending up as a technical person, having that like entertainment or creative outlet, I think, you know, I actually, believe it or not, I started college as a theater major. I was going to go into theater, and it wasn't until like my middle of my sophomore year or so, I'd taken AP Calc and I had done all the maths and sciences that I could, and I just sat down one day and I was kind of like, wow, maybe I should focus on something more technical. I've always liked being creative, but I thought, you know, it'd be a kind of a waste if I got some talents there and it seems to come easy to me. Maybe I should figure out a way to do it. And believe it or not, that's how I picked mechanical engineering. I was going to go do film special effects. That was my practical effects, blowing up things. Yeah. Or, and I got to spend, it's kind of fun. I did spend some time right out of college, working for Universal Studios and Disney as, you know, doing big effects and things like that too. But I always thought it, my background,
background
always helped me like talk to the art directors, and I could, I think, you know, if I would have stayed in the ride design world, there's lots of people that could probably say the same thing about their background, right? There's some really, really very creative technical people that doing an awesome job at being able to combine the two of them. But it's just a lot. I think it helps me in my career today is being able to be, like I was mentioning about reliability engineering being about transcending just sort of the normal technical disciplines, right? You're being able to go into a room and facilitate something, or being able to talk to an expert on something and bring them or get some information out of them. Certainly, I think being comfortable on stage and, you know, not, you know, it certainly has helped my career, I think.
Yeah, which I don't think a lot of people would expect, but there's definitely some tools there, and the creativity, like you said, I think that 100% benefits you and everything that you've done to date and the role that you're currently or going to be starting. So
yeah,
that's really, really cool. So then
what did you do there? What were you, were you in Celebration?
Yeah, so I was, well, I bounced around a little bit. So I moved down, that's what brought me to Florida. I started in a college program at the Contemporary Resort, just at a restaurant at Chef Mickey's, and then moved over to the performing arts program where we did kind of crowd hyping and dancing and also planning events. And I kind of started my meeting management and event management career. So I was there for a number of years doing that, but moved over to the corporate offices towards the end and focused on youth and leisure event programs. So it was a good experience, very similar to what you were saying. It kind of lays the groundwork for a lot of other opportunities and where you can kind of take your career thereafter. So,
yeah, I always thought it was really cool that if I would have wanted to, I changed jobs maybe 5 times in 7 years while I was there, right? Like, say, yeah. I worked in safety for a while. You could always, like, kind of reinvent yourself.
Yeah.
Which I thought was
kind of,
yeah, which is, yeah. I mean, there aren't many companies where you can go in and say, you know, like, I still know people that started off, like, in the character department with me that are now, they're all over the place there. Like, you know, some stayed in the entertainment, some have gone over to like merchandise, but it's just kind of cool to see how people, you know, grow in the company and take on new roles. But yeah, we could work at Disney and have a new job every 2 years and something completely different if you wanted to.
Yeah, very, very common. I think that was almost expected. I don't think it was, yeah. Yeah, it's rare to find someone there that's been there in the same position for more than 5 years, it seems.
Yeah. The other thing is you can easily fly under the radar too, right? You could, I'm not trying to knock anybody, but I've known people who have spent 30 years out there in the same role, right? And, you know, they must enjoy it somehow, but it's very easy to, I talked to Doug yesterday about this, the whole lizard brain and breaking out of, like, you know, well, I'm just safe here, so let me just stay here because it's, you know, I don't have to put myself out there. But, yeah. You know, I was easily on that track to be, like, my job was easy. I could do it pretty well. It was still interesting enough, and it would have been very easy for me to just say, I think I'll just be a senior engineer with Disney for the rest of my life, right? Like, why not? So yeah, it's just something that once you're aware of, you can, and it's not always easy to put yourself out there, but I'm glad I did, and I'm glad I finally, but yeah, it's so big and so complex that you can easily, if you don't recognize it, just be content where you are, and nothing wrong with it, I guess. But it's just easy to do. You don't really even see it happening. Look back 30 years later, and all of a sudden you're like, wow, I've been doing the same thing for 30 years.
Yeah, exactly. It could go either way. It just all depends on, I guess, what someone's looking to accomplish and achieve. But watching the evolution, I mean, your career is something that is really, really quite interesting in how you've applied that creativity. So what are some of the changes and improvements that you see coming in the next few years looking forward?
I pay attention to a lot of what's going on in the reliability community. And I would say that for the most part, this whole industry 4.0, the artificial intelligence, the machine learning, it's got to be big in the next few years. I was fortunate enough to work with some companies back in my Frito days that are in that space doing vibration with some machine learning and artificial intelligence that help with what's typically been an analyst only, although this learning is still supported by the analysts. This whole artificial intelligence thing is really taking off, and I think getting people, hopefully we can harness it and use it in the right way. I was just thinking the other day about, we've got to get it and make sure it doesn't drift too far away from the people. I think if people are still important, having the human aspect is going to be critical to maintain. I think so far all indications are that, that's being considered as we go into this other world of machines and machine learning. We're still keeping a human touch to it. The other thing that I'm personally involved with and trying to really put some thought around is the differentiation between risk and uncertainty. We as an industry, and this comes from other like cybersecurity risk groups, other groups that are looking at risk and in a totally different way, with outside of just assigning individual values to risks, but looking at uncertainty of risk. So something doesn't just happen once every 5 years, which is what we typically do today, right? We say, maybe this, what's the chance of this happening? Well, here's a number. Well, it's not really a number. It's maybe a distribution of values. And I don't see us using that a lot. There's a lot of other risk groups that are using that. So that's something that I'm personally passionate about, understanding a little bit better, and how we can apply some of the work that's, in other words, we're moving away. A lot of other risk groups are moving away from heat maps. Heat maps are still huge in our industry, right? We love to see the 5x5, chart of the red, yellow, and green areas. There's a lot of talk in the risk world that's inappropriate and could be actually doing more harm than good. And I want to see how we can apply that in our world. I've always felt that because of my engineering background, I've always thought there's room for more of a science in maintenance too. We tend to use a lot of rules of thumb. We have metrics that we don't really understand what's going on behind the metrics, but they've either become best practice or an industry is, or a body has put out a metric that we tend to focus on and go after, but we don't really understand the reasons behind it. And so I'm an advocate for bringing some science back to maintenance. And if we look back at like the Nolan and Heap RCM article or other studies that have been done, there's lots to it. There's lots of opportunity for us to apply science back to maintenance. So I'm a big advocate for looking at how we can try to do more of that in the years to come. And hopefully, there's some others that'll join me for that journey.
Definitely so. So Bill, is there anything else that you wanted to add to today's conversation before we wrap things up?
No, I'm fairly active on LinkedIn. So if anyone wants to connect with me there, I'm always happy to connect. And, I love I can get a little contrary at some points on LinkedIn. And sometimes it's just to maybe have a more interesting discussion than what may typically happen, where we all just agree on the same thing. So challenge me. I love like having respectful conversations that we both don't agree on something. So I tend to maybe post things that maybe push a few buttons or question some of the norms that we have and the status quo for the way of doing things. But I'm always interested in having a respectful, open conversation on LinkedIn. So search me out there. I'm happy to connect with almost anybody, and we'll have fun over there.
Perfect. That sounds good. And definitely getting all those different perspectives and varying opinions is really, really interesting. So I know I follow you, Bill, on LinkedIn, and I always enjoy the posts and the discussions that come from them. So again, feel free to follow Bill Bartow on LinkedIn. If anyone also has any questions about our conversation here today, you can leave your questions below in the comments area. And we'll be sure to share those with Bill as well. But Bill, a big thank you for your time today. It's always fun chatting with you, and we will talk to you again soon.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot. Take care.